Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast. Check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio.
Look, this is a 1-1 series. Yeah, Celtics go and split on the road. That did what they needed to do, right? And when I look at this series, guys, I went in picking the Warriors in six. I haven't moved off that. And part of the reason is I think there's going to be at least one game where game six Klay shows up. You know, like he can get hotter than anyone ever. And Jay, even if he doesn't wind up with 42 points or something, but he might score 18 of the quickest points you've ever seen and put the game away in the third quarter. But it has not been the case so far. Klay has been not looking that great. Listen to what he says about how he gets out of a slump.
That's the beauty of playing in today's age is you can go on YouTube and you can look up all your great moments. And I'll probably just YouTube Game 6 Klay because there's some very high-pressurized situations I was in, and I ended up shooting the ball well. And when you can do it, when your back's against the wall, you know you can do it at any given moment.
You see, this is what you have to worry about if you are Boston. The fact that Klay can score in spurts, right? So, like, limiting his touches in transition, continuing to stay aggressive and disciplined defensively to chase him off the three-point line, forcing him to do things off the dribble. I cannot iterate that more importantly. Forcing him to do things off the three-point line, Key, is one of the biggest takeaways that you have to have for the Boston Celtics because his shooting percentage goes down drastically. And that's how you play with him. And if you're able to limit the spurts from Klay Thompson and Jordan Poole, then it puts a lot more responsibility on the shoulders of Stephen Curry to keep up this 32 points per game in the NBA Finals. And I know that there's a lot of ambition and motivation for him there, considering people have always talked about him not being the NBA Finals MVP.
But he needs help. Everyone needs help. No one does it by themselves.
And that's the biggest thing, I think, takeaway for the Celtics tonight against Klay.
Well, yeah, when you talk about, Jay, you mentioned the dribble. When he doesn't dribble the football, basketball is 43%.
That's like me with NFL hockey.
Yes, dribble the football. 30% when he dribbles. You know, so when you look at it, they want him the Warriors want to allow him to catch and shoot. They don't want him putting the ball on the ground, 1-2, boom, let it go, or catching, let it go. When he's trying to create his own shot is when it seems like he's been getting into trouble.
Let me just like real quick on that stat. When he doesn't dribble, he's shooting 42%. When he puts the ball on the floor, 30%.
From the three-point line.
From the three-point line. So that's big. So, 30%, you are not an adequate three-point shooter. 42%, you're excellent.
Yeah. And so they've got to figure out how to get him coming off the screens, coming off those sort of things so he can just catch and shoot opposed to trying to create his own shot. You saw in game two, that's what he was doing. He was trying to create, or they were allowing him to create his own shot, which the Celtics said, you go right ahead and you do that because we're not going to allow you to catch a shoot. The couple times that he did catch a shoot, it was buckets. And I think it changes for him in game three, though. He knows what he has to do. The focus will be there, and they need to make sure that Steph Curry doesn't disappear in trying to make sure that Klay does his part as well.
You know, also, I think a big part for tonight on top of Klay Thompson, you know, trying to find his rhythm offensively is Jordan Poole is that kind of dynamic ball handler because of his ability to get to the rim, because of his ability to make shots from deep. I mean, he made that one shot in the third quarter that was from almost half court right before the end of the quarter.
Well, yeah, that was cooking then, though. That
yeah,
was
but I mean, it perpetuated cooking to a different degree for the Warriors at that time. But, like, he's the guy that if Klay isn't going at that rate, like if Klay – and we talked about Klay not having the same pop. He missed a lot of chippies. We are talking about NBA Finals. He's been playing basketball for a pretty extended period of time, the most he's ever played in the past 2.5 years. There is something about that, right? Maybe his legs are back tonight. But if they aren't, you need Jordan Poole and Andrew Wiggins to step up and carry the load.
This is why I was so impressed with Steph game two. Because Steph and Dre are like, when you talk about the nucleus of the change of the revolution in basketball, right? How Steph changed the game along with Dre. Dre comes out, does his thing, imposes his personality on the game. He's playing defense, all those things. And then Steph, when you really look at the way that game went, Celtics were winning. It felt to me like they were going to win. They just felt like in control to me.
and the Warriors didn't look right exactly, Steph went crazy in the third quarter, and it was over. But, Jay, that's when Jordan Poole, once they were up 12 or 15 points, now Jordan Poole gets hot and really salts away the game. But Steph needs that from Jordan Poole or someone, really, from Poole earlier. It can't just be Steph drags you to a 10, 12-point lead, and now Jordan Poole chips in. He needs those contributions. He's going to, it seems to me, need that kind of contribution at more pivotal points in the game. And I believe he will get that from Klay, but as you said, Klay can't create his own shot right now the way someone like Poole can.
Well, look, man, history favors the Warriors here to get one on the road. I mean, in the Stephen Curry era, they've always gotten one road game in these series. So, I think they'll come out potentially splitting, but even though Golden State won game two, it still feels to me like Boston has the slight advantage. Even though I'm still picking
Golden State's more quarters, the whole thing, all that.
I'm still picking the Warriors to win. I said six. But as I'm watching the game, I don't think you'll have a game in which Al Horford only take. I mean, he didn't take his first shot until 18 minutes into the game. Mm-hmm. This guy had 26 points in game one. Marcus Smart looked like a shell of himself. That's why, Key, a lot of times, you know, as an athlete, you look for things that get you to be lost in the game competitively. It almost felt like Marcus Smart wasn't the same Marcus Smart that we saw being aggressive in game one because he was too much worried about Draymond Green and the barking. It seemed like their whole team was. So how do you get those, you know, between White, between Marcus Smart and Al Horford, who combined for 65 points in game one, how do you get them back re-engaged and to be aggressive offensively? Because when they are, Celtics are a different team.
Well, if you worried about Draymond in game two barking, then what you going to do in game three to change that? Because he's going to bark in game three.
Be aggressive.
But how is that going to change anything? Just because you being aggressive, he's still going to bark. If that was your kryptonite, him barking in game two, and he's going to bark in game three, what, is that going to make you not be aggressive?
I don't think it was kryptonite. I honestly thought they looked like a baby team. They looked like a young team.
Kryptonite? Because they talked about it. You know, you mentioned, and we saw them, worried about it, doing timeouts on the sideline. What are we going to do? Don't pay attention. You focused in on the wrong thing.
Well, I mean, to me, kryptonite is something that always gets you, right? For me, I think that was a weakness that Draymond was able to take advantage of in game two. I don't think that's the kryptonite for who Boston is all the time.
Okay, I got you, Coach. I don't want to, you know.
No, I feel you. It's all good.
I don't want to poo-poo kryptonite.
But see, I'm into sci-fi, so Superman always had issues with kryptonite. Always. So that's why I don't think, like, I don't see this always being an issue for the Boston Celtics.
We're really debating kryptonite.
You said kryptonite. I went into my sci-fi.
Let me tell you what I really didn't like about kryptonite, okay?
Oh, God.
If some planet light years away, so many light years away, explodes, the odds of any piece of that planet finding its way to Earth are so remote. How are there all these pieces of kryptonite here on Earth? It's ridiculous.
Well, Jay, you can bring kryptonite back once you take that trip up in space.
Yeah, that's right. Jay's looking for kryptonite.
I'll tell you what the kryptonite is for the Celtics. Yeah. Turn the ball over, man. Like in all their series that they played, their kryptonite is when they turn the ball over, over 10 times, they end up losing these games. So when you turn the ball over 18 times against Golden State in game two, even if Klay Thompson is not having a good game, same with Wiggins. Even if Jordan Poole doesn't get going until late in the third quarter, it keeps you in the game.
I really still think
Klay 33 Thompson, points max off turnovers.
I even think about the series with Toronto. That kind of gets washed away because KD got hurt and then Klay got hurt. Steph actually was big in that series at key moments at home. Klay also, like, I think without KD, Golden State would have lost. But a lot of people think, no, as long as Klay doesn't also go down, Golden State would have won. Klay was shooting the lights out, right? He really, that was the last time he's played until very recently. 900-plus games. I'm not surprised that he had a couple of rough games in the finals by his standards. I don't expect that to last all finals. He's going to get hot. And can Boston deal with it when he does?
I may be wrong, but I don't think Steph's going to get going tonight. I think I think that Boston's going to make it a mission to slow down Steph tonight. I mean, averaging 32 points in the NBA Finals is a big thing. We always talk about the ancillary Klay. We're talking a lot about, you know, Wiggins and Jordan Poole. But Steph was able to get a lot of his buckets off high pick and roll, right, in which he got the matchup against Al Horford.
Yeah.
If you have Robert Williams, who is a little bit healthier tonight. I think he'll have a lot more of an increased role that gives a lot more length for Steph to shoot over if they do switch in the possessions. And I think they're going to limit Steph getting his touches in transition.
And won't be in drop coverage.
I don't think you'll see Steph get as many points tonight as he did the first two games.
Yeah, but whether or not he has a ton of points to me is not so relevant as when that happens. If Steph has a slow first half, but I want to see Steph, and yes, he needs help. He can't do it by himself. When it matters most in the finals, second half, third quarter, fourth quarter, Jay, he could wind up with 18, 20 points, but, you know, 12 of them come when you need it most. To me, that's a good game.
Okay.
Keyshawn, Jay Willimax is presented by Progressive Insurance. Back to the NFL.
Let's just start with the fact that he's actually here for this. Obviously, last year, he skipped this mini camp and everything else in his offseason of discontent.
I truly believe that he loves the game, and I do think it's going to be really hard for Aaron Rodgers to walk away from football with just one Super Bowl.
He'll retire at some point, but I'm not going to talk about him retiring and wonder if he's going to retire as we get into the season every single damn
Something
week.
Tells me you will.
No, I won't.
Keyshawn, Jay Willimax, ESPN Radio, Sirius XM Channel 80, and your smart speakers. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Guys, what superstars are done winning titles? We asked it earlier in the show. 888-729-3776. 888-SAY-ESPN.
Jay Will.
LeBron?
Guys, Rob Domofsky asked Aaron Rodgers the following at a press conference about his future. Listen to the question. Listen to Rodgers' response right in the very beginning.
So do you think you'll finish your career here?
Yes, definitely.
See yourself at some point saying, I'm going one more year and then I'm done.
I would never say that publicly. I've never been one to want some sort of going away season or anything like that. And plus, I don't think it's fair to the mental state at the end of the season and thinking how you feel. If you say, I'm for sure playing two more or three more years, and then you have a magical season and end with a championship and think that that might be the best way to write off. You know, I don't want to commit to something. You say, I'm only playing one more year, and you have a bitter taste in your mouth and still got the drive and the passion to play one or two more years. I just don't want to get pigeonholed into it. So I'm focused on this season. I'm never going to drag it out in the off season. The conversations I've had with Brian have been very honest and direct, and that's not going to change. And we'll sit down after the season and hopefully after a championship and figure out what the next step is.
Okay, so that hot news, I think that's hot news, Aaron Rodgers saying I'm going to retire as a Packer and all this kind of stuff, was asked by ESPN Packers reporter Rob Domofsky, who is with us now. What's going on, Rob?
Max, how are you?
Doing well. That's quite an answer you got, I thought. Were you surprised to hear it?
Rob, didn't my man just sign a contract?
Yeah, and the funny thing was, earlier it started with, someone asked him why he signed the contract, and he kind of, in this roundabout way that he tends to do, said, you know, it's a three-year deal, but we really did it 3 years for salary cap reasons, and that's not an indicator of how much longer I'm going to play. There was a lot to unpack in all that 20 minutes that he talked to us yesterday. I think you're right, though. The most interesting thing is that, you know, he said, yes, I'm definitely retiring as a Packer, because, you know, even 3 months ago, before he had signed that extension, everything was on the table, from retirement to returning to Green Bay to wanting a trade. I mean, so, you know, it's almost like he's come full circle, because he always said he wanted to play his entire career for the same team. Then last year in the offseason of discontent, he said he was never playing here again. And now we're back to, I'm going to finish my career here. And in that long answer about, you know, I would never say that this is going to be my last year. I would never do that. But if, like, you know, if we had a magical season, went out and won it all, you know, maybe that's the way to walk away. I do think that if they won a Super Bowl this year, that probably would be it. But the other thing that we didn't hear in there that was interesting is that he was asked a lot about Davante Adams and his departure and wanting out of Green Bay. And he, you know, ultimately it came down to Davante wanting to, you know, probably get out of the shadow of Rodgers and play with his college quarterback in Derek Carr. But he did say that he and Davante had some long, frank conversations about how much longer that Aaron was going to play. And while Rodgers said he, you know, didn't indicate how much longer it would be to us, you know, it sort of felt like to me that maybe he told Adams, yeah, you know, I'm probably only playing one more year, so, you know, maybe you should look out for your long-term future and get settled with a quarterback that you're going to be with for a while. That part is speculation on my part, reading between the lines. But, you know, I thought that was an interesting soundbite and quote as well.
You media members, Rob, you guys just take the cheese all the time. He throw it out there to you media people, and you guys just bite it. I mean, it's unbelievable because the way that I'm looking at this thing is when he decides to retire, you know, because he's becoming more likable now, right? The whole problems that he had a spring ago or one foot in, one foot out, all that. And people was like, oh, he's just doing it for attention. Yeah. His whole deal was never for attention because he was getting attention by dating celebrity women, by being on Jeopardy. That's his attention right there. He doesn't need us to follow him and run around. That's only football attention. I look at it and I say Tom Brady is more likable now than he was in New England. In New England, people hated Tom Brady. Now he's funny. Yeah. He's on social media. People are liking him. I think 16 months from now, 12 to 16 months, Aaron Rodgers is going to be so likable that he's looking at a $375 million deal from somebody, whether it's a game show host or whether it's one of these networks that's so desperate that they're willing to hire somebody that has a little bit of personality that can come out. What do you think?
Well, Key, he may be more likable from a national standpoint, but I will tell you this, from the Packers fan base standpoint, there were a lot of people pretty unhappy with how he performed in the playoffs against San Francisco in that game where they only put up 10 points. You know, pretty unhappy with how he played the year before in the playoffs when they lost at home to Tampa as the number one seed. And, you know, I think with Packers fans specifically, he may not have as much equity as maybe he does nationally. Now, what matters more, you know, probably his national image and national perspective. I mean, I don't know what the ratings were for that golf match with him and Brady and Mahomes and Allen, but my suspicion is it was pretty high and that, you know, he was pretty engaging in that setting and could do something like that. Look, Aaron's a different dude. He's always marched to a different beat, and I'm not so sure his post NFL career will be, you know, the same path as you know, some of the other guys, you know, like yourself and other guys that have ended up successful in the media. I don't know that he'll do that.
Rob, I'm curious, how much pressure do you think this season – well, actually, no, let me take that back. Do you think it's – before it's all said and done, do you think Aaron Rodgers will win another Super Bowl in Green Bay?
Just get right to the –
right to it, Rob. Yeah, I want to get right to it. Give me the potatoes.
Oh. There are people that think he's not a playoff-winning quarterback anymore. I don't know that I would necessarily go that far, but his recent playoff performances have not been great since they won the Super Bowl. They've played, I believe it's 16 playoff games, which is essentially, well, what used to be a full season, and he's 7-9 in those playoff games. I mean, if you're a starting quarterback and you go 7-9 in a season, you know, you're probably, you know, you're probably getting run out of the job, or at least your job's in jeopardy. So, you know, I do think they have put some things in place, you know, and how can you say, well, they're better without Devontae Adams. They're not better offensively without Devontae Adams, but they have put some things in place that maybe take some of the pressure off Aaron Rodgers to do it all himself. Defensively, they've gotten so much better. You know, I mean, they were really good last year, and they brought back all their important pieces, plus added two first-round draft picks on the defensive side of the ball, Quay Walker and Devontae Wyatt from Georgia, both from Georgia. They have invested in special teams in the sense that they finally have a proven special teams coach in Rich Bisaccia, who was the interim head coach of the Raiders last year, and players loved him. And special teams has been a huge problem here throughout Rodgers' entire tenure. And they've had some massive special teams meltdowns that have cost him. So I do think, Jay, that there are things in place that maybe will make it easier for Rodgers to not have to do it all on his own. And then and going back specifically to Devontae Adams, as incredible as Devontae is and as great as their connection was, go back and look at that last pass play against the 49ers when they were trying to drive down the field to tie or win the game. He was locked in on Devontae Adams, who was double covered, and Rodgers threw into it incomplete when he had Alan Lazard wide open over the middle of the field for what would have been a first down and move the chains and keep the drive alive. And he didn't go that way because you know, theoretically, you know, he even said it yesterday, 80% of their pass plays last year were designed for Davante Adams. Now, you know, he won't necessarily be locked in on one guy, and maybe he'll be more willing to take what is given to him rather than to force it to Davante.
Rob, give me a real quick answer on this. Matt LaFleur, if Aaron Rodgers wets the bed here in the next year or two, is Matt LaFleur pressure just going to just explode where he's going to be on the hot seat?
Well, he's won 13 games in each of his first 3 years. I think the more telling thing, Key, will be after Rodgers is gone. What does he do? What does Matt LaFleur do without Aaron Rodgers? That will ultimately determine whether he's, you know, on the hot seat or he's, you know, or he's a success or whatever ends up happening. If it's Jordan Love or anybody else.
That is Rob Domofsky, ladies and gentlemen, ESPN Packers reporter. As always, Rob, thanks for jumping on with us this morning.
No problem, guys. We'll be seeing you.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.
You either have to completely ignore Green, his antics, and his disruption, or we're going to confront him every single time he runs his mouth.
Nobody's paying to watch this stuff to see guys get thrown out of the game and you not see the game you want to watch.
You do have to be diligent.
No,
or
you don't.
Somewhat, man,
no,
look.
You don't.
Okay.
No, you don't. So, you got to be who he is, Jay.
Little Pete Rock and CL Smooth.
Yeah, man.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, ESPN Radio, Sirius XM Channel 80. And we're joined now by Warriors TV analyst Kalina Azubuike. Talked a lot, Kalina, good morning. We talked a lot about how the Celtics should respond. How should the Warriors respond to Draymond's antics, or for whatever you want to call them, Draymond's behavior? Forget about the Celtics for a second. What do the Warriors do? He's doing emergency podcasts and the like.
I think their approach to it is just let him be himself. And last game, it kind of felt like he knew that officiating crew was going to really make him earn that second technical and get kicked out of the game. I feel like he kind of knew that he could push it just a little bit, and that was more of a veteran officiating crew, and they weren't going to kick him out that easily. But I just love the way he started out game two. You could tell he was going to come out tenacious. Obviously, he's the emotional leader, and he started with this intensity that really set the tone for the Warriors. Even though they kind of got off to a slower start and the Celtics were really surging there early, he really brought that physicality. And everybody said that the refs putting the whistle away and letting them play a little more was going to be a Celtics advantage. He came out thinking, okay, I'm going to make this our advantage. We're going to be the more physical team. We're going to be the more aggressive team. And he played with an attitude that really brought everybody else along for the Warriors, and everybody else kind of followed suit, and they finally got in rhythm and really pulled away from the Celtics. So I feel like the Warriors kind of like what Draymond is doing, and I feel like he's probably going to try to do the same thing in game three tonight. But he's just got to be careful and make sure he's cognizant of the officiating crew and understanding what he can and can't get away with. But he was kind of pushing it there in game two, but it looked like he kind of knew he wasn't going to get kicked out.
Kalina, I got to ask you a question as a hooper, man. We've never had a situation within the NBA Finals where a player has a podcast. It's brilliant, right? Strategy, marketing-wise,
yeah.
Brilliant for his brand. But we never had a situation in which a player has a podcast in which he breaks down games or his thought process to things literally hours after games, or even, you know, 3 days in between games, giving his random thoughts on issues. Does that bring extra added attention on a locker room? Because you know how coaches are. Coaches, they want to minimize distractions. They want to minimize all these different narratives. They just want you to focus on the game. I'm not saying that doing a podcast takes away from your focus on the game, but how do they internally deal with a lot of the stuff that pops up from Draymond doing his podcast throughout the course of the finals?
I think they're kind of all used to Draymond just talking a lot, and now he's just got more platforms to do it where everybody else can hear it. But I really don't think they're worried about it. I feel like they expect Draymond to bring it whenever he's on the court, be ready to play, do what you do. You got to be our emotional leader. You got to set the tone with your energy. You got to be the defensive quarterback. And as long as he does that, they're going, hey, do as many podcasts as you want, emergency podcasts, TNT, whatever it is, but just come ready to play and don't air out any of our laundry. If there is any dirty laundry or whatever, just keep what's supposed to be in-house, in-house. And I think Draymond's done a pretty good job of that. He understands he needs to keep the trust that he has with his teammates and that bond and that family that they have in the locker room and around the organization intact and not break that code. And he hasn't broken the code there. So I think the Warriors and his teammates are kind of just going, hey, let Draymond be Draymond. He's excited about kind of being the first when it comes to being in the media and being a player at the same time and breaking things down, and he's gaining listeners and all the things that are happening right now with his podcast and TNT and everything. It's kind of what he had in mind. He wanted to be kind of a groundbreaker, and he's doing that. And it's just about, hey, okay, if you're going to do all that, make sure you're going out and performing. And he came out with an intensity, like I talked about in game two, that they want to see really the rest of the series.
What do the Celtics need to do, though, to not fall down 2-1 and lose this one at home in game three tonight?
Keyshawn, I feel like they really need their role players to have big games again. Obviously, Jason Tatum was much better in game two. You know, we know they need him to play well. Jaylen Brown has really become a reliable fourth quarter scorer for them throughout their playoffs. So they need him to have a big game as well. He probably is thinking, I have to play better than I did in game two. But I think offensively, they can't have long stretches of the game where there's power outages. And I feel like the Warriors have proven that defensively, they can kind of lock you down and get separation. And like they've proven that, the Warriors have proven that in two games where they've kind of been in control of the game in that third quarter. They're able to get separation. They're able to play pretty devastating defense for a good amount of the game. Some kind of stretch where they're just able to get some separation and pull away from the game. The Celtics really can't let that happen. And they would love to keep the game close because they're just not as good of an offensive team as the Warriors are, I believe. They're not as good of a shooting team, even though they shoot a ton of threes, and they actually shot it pretty well during the postseason. But they can't have those stretches of the game where the Warriors just kind of shut them down for a while and they're able to get separation. So I feel like the sting of how game one ended for the Warriors may stick with the Warriors in a good way. And the Warriors have actually been the best team during the playoffs when it comes to scoring in the fourth quarter. I don't think they're concerned about how their fourth quarters are going to end and closing games out, even though game one happened. So I think that kind of confidence they've built up during the postseason, their improvement from the regular season to the postseason when it comes to closing out fourth quarters, that'll kind of bode well for the Warriors on the road. They're obviously going to try to get two of these in a row, but the Celtics can't let those stretches of the game happen when the Warriors are getting that kind of separation.
Warriors TV analyst Kalena Azubuki, before we let you go, I've been talking a lot about Steph Curry's legacy and what a finals MVP would mean for it. We all know he's one of the greatest players of all time, all that stuff, but we start thinking top 10 greatest players ever, that inner sanctum of the all-time greats. They've all spent time as, you know, the best player in the league or arguably the best player in the league. They've all won finals MVPs. Does he need to get a finals MVP, in your opinion?
I don't think he needs it for his legacy, but he would like it. And I think he's well on his way, given how he's played the first two games. It's funny, back then I actually enjoyed watching the Warriors kind of get a kick out of seeing Steph win the Western Conference and finals MVP. And his teammates were laughing, and Draymond Green picked him up right away. As soon as he got it, you see he's just kind of laughing because he knows he hasn't won the finals MVP, and this is the first year for the Western Conference finals MVP. But they're all happy for him, genuinely happy. Clay's jumping up and down. But I do think he wants it. And let's be honest, he definitely could have won it before now, but he had KD on the team, and KD was just a beast. And then, obviously, Andre Iguodala changed that whole series in 2015, and he's happy for his teammates. He's just an unselfish guy, and I think it's kind of who he is. The fact that he hasn't won one, and his attitude is the way he is, and probably the most unselfish superstar that we've ever seen. So I feel like, no, he doesn't need it for his legacy to kind of, you know, solidify him as one of the greats, but I think he wants it, and he's a competitive dude, ultra competitive. He's a cold-blooded assassin, kind of a silent assassin. You love his attitude and his unselfishness, but he definitely wants it. And I think he's playing that way. I think he's really managed the game really well, especially in game two. You just saw his demeanor. He just stayed calm, and everybody else kind of followed suit as he's just managing the game, knocking down threes, making the right reads, making great plays, bringing that energy, moving without the ball. He's the center of everything the Warriors do, and he knows that. He knows he's the most important player in this series.
Thanks, Kalena. What?
I appreciate you guys, man.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
The Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max Podcast.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We all go through things socially where we don't feel like ourselves, where we don't feel like going out, where we feel drained, or we're not bursting with energy. And when you're not feeling right, that's where BetterHelp can come in. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills, how to set boundaries in so many different ways, for which it empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who experience major trauma. Therapy is for more than those people, and it's there to help you. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. It's there for you. It's there to help you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/unsportsmanlike today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/unsportsmanlike.
So I don't know if you guys know about this, but at Duke basketball the other day, they announced that they had a new general manager for the team, and she is former Nike executive Rachel Baker. Now, she worked, Key, with and Max, with Kevin Durant for a while through Nike. She also worked with the WNBA and assisting them on the rebranding of the WNBA image and also all their digital solutions around the NBA All-Star Game and NBA Combine. But it led me to a bigger conversation around, and Key, I'm curious, like, where college football is with this, if they've had the official title named as general manager. but we're seeing a lot more college institutions treated like Fortune 500 companies, right? So, you know, you talk about the NBA, you have a general manager of an NBA team. Like now,
GMs in college sports.
That's what I'm saying. Working with kids on their NIL deals, working on all the ancillary things that you have to build the brand around now to incentivize kids to come to your program. Key, do they do this in college football already?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily call it a general manager. I don't remember them having the title saying general manager. I think Billy Devaney may have had it with the Nebraska Cornhuskers under Mike Riley. Billy Devaney was a former general manager of the St. Louis Rams and assistant general manager of the San Diego Chargers at the time. But I do know that Nick Saban started sort of kind of like an entire scouting kind of front office operations at Alabama, and now you see it throughout college football where Nick kind of started that and then it trickled down to other programs within college football or college schools. But USC had Mark Jackson, who is the athletic director at Villanova now, who was under Pete Carroll and Lane Kiffin at USC. So he was like the pseudo general manager, the ops guy, did everything, recruiting, did it all. Helped decide when they're going to sign players, how many players they're going to sign, all that sort of stuff. So it's been around for a while, maybe under a different title.
I want the new, like an NCAA or, you know, like a college basketball video game with franchise mode. You'd be the GM of a college team.
I mean, it's dope. So her exact role description is, you know, she will specialize in helping players enhance their personal and professional skill sets, capitalize on strategic partnerships, including NIL opportunities, and work to support players in navigating opportunities and challenges that come with being student athletes at the highest.
You know how weird it's going to be for kids a generation from now?
Title.
Think how weird it's going to be for kids a generation from now in college when it's like, yeah, you used to not be able to get cream cheese on a bagel. Like, that was a violation of and
extra donut.
Coach K would always say, oh, like, when you get to the league, you recognize you've already been a pro before you become a pro.
Yeah.
I mean, that somebody got cream cheese on a bagel?
Remember,
like, who's really telling that, though? Like, get
a life. At least snitching on that, too.
I'm a huge Star Wars fan, and you would see Obi-Wan Kenobi do this all the time. It's called Jedi Mind Tricks. He's like, you will not be doing this, and waves his two fingers across, right? That is what I watched Draymond Green do to the Boston Celtics.
I don't want to offend anybody, but I don't even know who Obi-Wan
Kenobi is. Obi-Wan Kenobi, I got you.
Up until a couple years ago, I thought it was Dark Vader.
Yeah, Dark Vader.
I thought it was Lifesaver.
Every little kid thought it was Lifesaver when they were. Makes perfect sense.
Oh, I took out the Lifesaver.
It's even the same color as the Lifesavers. It's like green, red,
That's
blue.
It's candy.
Yeah.
The red ones are the best.
The red ones are the best. I like the yellow ones, personally.
It's understandable why Key didn't know Obi-Wan Kenobi. After all, he went by the name Ben Kenobi for so long, so he was, you know, that's probably how Key knows him. When I'm with you, you remake my
day. By the way, did you hear Ryan Clark yesterday,
Candy
really quickly?
Candy girl. What's that?
He said that Chris Brown can do everything that Michael Jackson can do, and he's better.
Can I
overall
tell you the most underrated thing about Michael Jackson?
He's not wrong.
Michael Jackson's singing voice is underrated. It's underrated.
Not wrong.
Yeah.
888 say ESPN.
Never mind, Jay. I'm gonna stay out of that.
729-3776. What superstars are done winning titles?
Jason Williams.
Hey. Hey.
Cameron in Memphis. Which superstars are done winning championships?
Aaron Rodgers.
Wow.
I think he's saying this, man. I'm gonna tell you the reason why I say this. Because when he actually won the Super Bowl, you know, he was a wild card team. You know, he was gritty. He was hungry. Now that, you know, he's, you know, MVP back-to-back, you know, I don't think he's as hungry as he was back in the days. So I don't think he'll get another one. And, you know, they won't be in a wild card again, you know, because he's too good for that, obviously. But I think it's Aaron Rodgers. And I just want to say this. I am a longtime Giants fan. Max and Jay, you guys are my brothers. I don't know what to say about you, but Keyshawn. All right, that's all I need to say.
What you mean you don't want to say about me? Don't hang up.
He called
what
you
I do?
He called you K, too. That's how I feel.
What
about
I do,
K.
Man?
You're not a Giants fan, man. I got to be with my brothers now.
I'm not a nobody fan in NFL. I don't give a damn about them. I went to the Super Bowl. It ain't got nothing to do with me. I go, hey, look, as I tell people, regardless, I'm going to the Super Bowl every year if your team don't make it. I'm still going.
Well, we're trying to go, damn it. That's our point, Key. We need to go.
Hey. Yeah, yeah. Bring me with you, man, because I know the Giants not going to beat us.
Not this year. If Nabel can work out, let's see what else.
I'm one of your homeboys from Memphis, Jay.
Hey, man, that's the spot. That's where it's at, Key. I'll get you down to a game next year.
Is LeBron James done winning titles, guys? When we're asking the fans what superstars are done
man,
winning titles.
I mean,
Key, you take that one. Key, take it away.
You know, I don't. In my heart of heart, is that right? Heart of hearts, yeah. I don't believe he's done, but.
In your head.
In my head, it says he's done.
But what about this, though, Key? LeBron is still playing at such a high level. If he wanted to not be the focal point of a team, he could be an extremely valuable role player when he's like 50 if he wanted to be.
Yeah, but come on, Max.
That doesn't count?
Why would LeBron James, why would he want to play basketball at 50?
I mean, if you can play it, why not?
He's done in a couple years playing NBA basketball, man.
So you don't see a chip in LeBron's future.
I can't count him out, Keith.
No, I can't really count,
I can't do it.
It's just
I can't do it, man. Like I've seen it. I mean, yeah, injuries would be a thing. And look, I could be wrong. I'm just saying that dude at age 37 to do what he did this year. You know, some people just got good things that happen to him, Keith. You know, he always say that.
Yeah,
he's in that category to me.
No, I really can't count him out, but it's like, dude, like, let's get to the season. Let's see how the season starts.
Sean and Yonkers, which superstar is done winning titles?
I feel like Kevin Durant is done winning titles because Kyrie Irving is always something wrong with Kyrie Irving. It's always something, you know, he always has something to do.
Don't fall victim to this. Don't listen to the breadcrumbs the media puts out there.
Kyrie does seem a bit busy at times.
Because we had a pandemic?
No, but also, like, sometimes he's not available to play.
He was available last year. He got hurt. James Harden and KD.
He wasn't available the whole time, actually.
But he's been available. See, this is sort of that narrative, Jay, just like the Draymond technical foul playoff stuff, this is the same thing about Kyrie. The first thing they say is he's never available. When has he really significantly missed time other than this year because of the vaccination? Like, when has he really honestly missed
he's
a significant amount of time?
He's taken some time off to deal with personal issues.
How many games?
Man, he missed two games or something.
These become narratives that get used with these blanket statements, but actually when you dig into the details,
it's not that many. Yeah, it could be.
It's not that many.
Or is it stuff around summer?
He
didn't want to go to the bubble. They weren't even in the bubble.
They wasn't even
they
in, the,
in
bubble.
The bubble. But it's like, oh, that's a distraction.
You guys
it's
might narrative. Have a point there because it does stand out in my mind. Like, a lot of times he's just not available.
That's
but
why
maybe,
we hear, that's
maybe
why
it's more
here
symbolic than anything else.
That's why we're here to help you, Max.
Oh, well, thank you
we're
so much.
We're here to help you because, I get so passionate about the damn narratives that are set by people.
Mm-hmm.
Almost cursed. Really
don't
cursed.
Curse.
Because it was set for me. That's the stuff people tried to do to me. What are you talking about? What do you mean I did that?
Oh, that Wayne Gravett's reliable.
Oh, stop. Stop it. Listening to you New York
Get
chunks.
That other foot down, damn it, Key.
Yeah, I need to work on that.
So I want you to play basketball. Just shut up and play basketball.
No, but it's always that narrative. They make it sound like Kyrie missed like four seasons in his entire career.
Well, how many games was it that he missed for personal reasons that year? Because it does stand out to me like it was a while, but maybe it wasn't much.
No,
I don't remember. Can we look that up?
Five games or something.
If only
like
someone
that,
would
man.
Invent a repository for human information that we could just hit a few buttons and find the info on. Anything like that? You know, I just
like
came up
exists?
With an idea. We should have something called an internet.
An internet.
Can anyone look that up? How many games did Kyrie Irving miss that year for
seven
personal
games.
Reasons?
He took a seven-game hiatus.
Seven games.
I said five. It was seven.
Seven's not nothing,
seven
but
games.
It's not the end of the world.
How many damn games is played in the season?
82.
Okay, now do the math,
well,
Max.
Well, not that one. There was less than 82 because of the pandemic.
God. See, here we go. There's that guy right there.
Give or take. Seven is give or take. It's in the ballpark of 10%. That year may have been a little more. Most years it would have been a less. But it's about 10% of the games for personal reasons.
Certain superstars, man. By the way, I don't begrudge.
I don't begrudge him. I don't begrudge anyone who needs to take care of personal reasons. I don't ask questions. Like, you got to go do that. But
reach
when,
over, Jay,
when you also look at injury, and then you look at the pandemic, and you wouldn't get that. People, it's not that so-called narrative.
He missed seven of
72 games.
That's 10% for personal reasons. Has he heard it all?
Will you reach over and grab his beard for me and pull it?
Kawhi
really
Leonard has missed way more now for not personal reasons.
Lay off the beard. Jealous? It looks so good. All right. Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, ESPN Radio, Sirius XM, Channel 80.
Thanks for listening to Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast. Check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.